And that's why we love our customers so much, because they, you know, they post the pictures and let us repost it. And I think, you know, once that, a lot of businesses work by word of mouth. Well, once you got that, you know, that the food is good, but that's like only half of what you need to, I guess, to operate a successful truck. Once that customer make that post, now her friends and her family know about it, or his friends and his family know about it. And it's like, you know, where'd you get that from? Oh, that looks so good. And I think that continuous feedback just keep people coming. And that's what any business, especially the food business, need. It's like that constant positive feedback and constant reviews and pictures.
Hello, and welcome to Food Crush, the On Milwaukee podcast for people who eat. As always, I am your co-host, Matt Miller, culture editor at On Milwaukee, and I am joined, as always, by Lori Frederick, culinary editor and general food knower, Lori Frederick of On Milwaukee. How are you doing, Lori?
Food knower. That's a new one.
Yeah, yes. I mean, we've got food growers, we got food knowers.
Yes, the food eaters. Yeah. I do a little of all of that. Yeah. So I'm doing well. I'm doing well. How about yourself? Yeah,
I've got a tickle in my throat, which is going to make my various coughs during this sound really ominous, but I swear I'm not sick. I'm just bad at drinking fluids.
It's okay. I have the same issue.
And in the name of that, Lori, I'll let you introduce our guest while I insist on coughing wildly, and hopefully producer Gabe, our wonderful producer, will edit out those coughs. Or you'll leave them in and just make me look like a fool.
So I'm actually excited about today's podcast because we are here with Brandon Hawthorne, who owns a newer food business called Twisted Plants with his wife, Ariel. Ariel or Ariel?
Ariel,
okay.
She's comfortable with both.
Well, I was going to say, like my name, people pronounce it all different ways. So I totally understand that. But you guys, you know, you guys got your start really not long ago. It's probably been a year.
Yes, as a nonprofit, like a year and a half.
Yeah. And you started out as a food truck. Yeah. So give us a lowdown, because you started as a food truck and you recently moved into a brick and mortar restaurant.
Correct.
Kind of quicker than you thought you would. And you did so kind of during this crazy global pandemic that we're having. So your story to business operations is a little different than some. Yeah. But tell us a little bit about what you guys do, what kind of food you serve. And then we'll get into, I think, your story, which I think is particularly kind of compelling, like how you got yourselves into definitely. All of this. Yeah.
Let's see. We are 100% a vegan plant-based restaurant located down in Cudahy. So we did make that transition from the food truck to the brick and mortar. Starting off with the food truck, we hit dozen of events within last year, and it's just the love has been surreal. We've been getting a lot of good feedback, a lot of good reviews, and the customers have been very welcoming to us.
So talk to me about why you started the business in the first place, because I think, you know, your story is compelling. This was about, you know, kind of Ariel and her health, correct?
Correct. Very much so. And we had already had our, I guess you can say, one foot in the food business. Back in like 2014, we had a food cart, a hot dog cart. And we left that alone for a while. And then in 2016, my wife, Ariel, she had got diagnosed with cancer. And then she had made the diet switch to eating a more plant-based vegan diet. Mm-hmm. And with that, I knew for certain that I always wanted to be in the food industry. I'm a people person, so I like seeing customers smile, I like seeing people happy, like getting reviews, whether it be good or bad, just to see how can I improve and how I can make someone else's life better. So when she made that diet change, I also followed. And we was just mainly her playing around with recipes. And she said, no, why not put it back out on the streets?
Yeah. Well, and she did that, like, because it's not like your doctor is going to tell you, oh, by the way, you should adopt a plant-based diet. So that was a lot of research on her part. Uh-huh. Yeah. Like, how did she figure out, what was going to work for you guys? And how far from, like, what was your diet like before that? How different was it to go plant-based?
For me, it was relatively hard. It's a lot of family cookouts, a lot of ribs, a lot of chicken wings and mac and cheese. And, for her, it was probably a little bit more easier. I'm like the garbage can man at home. I eat everything. So whatever the kids don't eat, whatever she don't eat, I eat off their plate. So it's like, you know, whatever she cooks, I eat. And, for her, she's a little bit more picky. And like, once she started playing around with the recipes, she said, oh, okay, I can make this, or just basically taking the regular everyday comfort foods and making it vegan or plant-based. And it just went from there.
Yeah. So were there some favorite dishes that you remember kind of from the beginning? That she transformed into vegan?
The first one for me was like the mac and cheese. And it's crazy because we don't really have that on our menu as a regular day option or like an everyday option. Mm-hmm. It's more of a, like a special. But when she made like it was the mac and cheese. Then she made a lasagna based on zucchini noodles and like a pasta with the zucchini. It's like, okay, this might be easier than we thought it was.
Because when the food tastes good,
and, back to the food truck, it's like everybody loves burgers for the most part. So just make everything veganized and just put it back on the street and see how people react to it.
Yeah. Well, and you did it. You did the food truck in a way where, kind of similar to the way that you transformed your diet, you start with things that are familiar to people, right? Like, exactly. So things like burgers, like everybody likes burgers, but people don't realize that you can have a really delicious burger without the meat. Yeah.
Exactly.
So that was kind of your goal, right?
Yes.
And how do you do that? I mean, what does it take to take, you know, my craving for a burger and fulfill that with something that is made just from plants and vegetables?
And it's like more when, and it's back to playing with the recipes, a lot of YouTube videos and just pairing different sauces with just different flavorings and seasonings. And like I said, like Ariel, she's more of a picky eater than I. So I know when she likes something, I know it's good. So and we just know burger after burger, recipe after recipe, and it just, everything just kept coming together.
What were some of the biggest challenges with kind of converting, you know, burger recipes? I mean, was it the cheese? Was it being able to make sauces, you know, that really tasted great? Like for you, what was the biggest, challenge?
Because I'm sure
you didn't just come up with a recipe or a bunch of recipes for burgers and they all were delicious from day one.
I strangely feel like maybe the burger the easiest part, because I feel like the burger at this point might be the easiest part, and it'd be something more like the cheese that would be the tricky part.
And that's right. So the burgers did end up being the easier part. It was more so, just going to, our favorite stores are Aldi's and Woodman's. So going in and realizing that we can pick up a jar of vegan mayonnaise and they have three or four different types of vegan cheeses and seeing which one, because all vegan cheese does not melt. And we want that whole burger factor to just mm-hmm. like when you look at it, just to be like, wow, now that's, you can't tell it's a plant-based burger. So it was doing right. that. And especially once you got a good cheese and you can know a good patty, you're already there. But the harder part was coming up with like the spices and seasoning for the queso sauce, or when she did the lasagna, she did like two different types of lasagna, seeing which one worked better. So that was more of the harder part. Mm-hmm. And that's like why we do some of our Sunday specials. So it's more geared towards, okay, we tried this before, let's see, do a work in a restaurant. And like, we got the famous bowl yeah. and like the soul food part of it. So we actually is hoping to try to perfect the more of like the ribs and a nice ham. So we're working on that as of now, just to see how we'll take off.
Is working with plants easier, you find, or harder than working with your... I mean, I imagine it has to be harder, but on some level, is it also easier?
I think if this was like a in-between mark, because... Okay. It also depends on what you're trying to make or what you're trying to perfect. Because everything, a lot of food in general, depending on how you season it and how you flavor it, depends on how it's going to come out. So once you got that factor down, it comes together. But also, like, if you're using bottle wheat gluten or TVP or like a tester protein, like nailing and trying to put it together with using the right water combination, that could be real tricky. And if you think you can bite into a chicken tender, but it's hard as a brick, so you got to go back to the recipe or go back to the drawing board and do it all
yeah.
over again.
Yeah. Because it's about not only flavor, but texture.
Yeah, exactly. You know? Exactly.
And that's where, and I do think, you know, I mean, when you talk about burgers, like burgers have come a long way. Uh-huh. I mean, I remember when all the veggie burgers in the world were like little mushy, like, I don't know, hippie, you know, it was like food. I mean, when I was a kid, my aunt and uncle owned a health food store, and, you know, some of those veggie burgers, it was like, oh no. This is not a burger. This is not good. Whereas now it's about like flavor and texture, and it may not, you know, you're going to put it side by side with meat unless you have something like an Impossible Burger, which is a science, a science experiment, you know, like there are differences, but to me, it's a matter of like, is this equally delicious? And I think you can say now, like, yes, it's a little different, but it's equally delicious.
Very much so. Very much so. We have a lot of like people just trying it out for the first time. It's like, you know, I can tell it's not really meat, but at the same time, it's a wonderful burger. And that's been our goal from the jump.
Yeah, yeah. And I'm going to step back a little because, you know, we talked about why, you know, you guys kind of switched over to a plant-based diet. And the fact of the matter is that made a huge difference for Ariel in terms of her health. And, you know, she is currently, she's in remission now,
yes,
correct?
Yeah, correct.
And how much of that would you attribute to the role of diet?
And honestly, we can't be 100% sure, but we can say that, and I wish she was here to speak on it, but I know... Mm-hmm. Like, personally, she's been feeling a lot better. Just as far as just her everyday health and her lifestyle has been more of a upbeat, very energized every day. So I think, you know, just diet in general, it played a big part in her going through all that.
Yeah. Well, I remember her telling me, you know, it's like I saw it in like the health of my skin and my hair and my nails. And I remember her saying that. And it's like, and, you know, my attitude and my energy levels. Mm-hmm. And I think all those things, you know, even if that's not directly impacting the cancer, the fact that you feel better in general,
right,
you feel right. better, you look better, yourself is better, I think puts you in a place where you can definitely, you know, fend things off.
Yes, ma'am.
You know, and help your body fight things. So that's been good. But how about yourself? You know, did you notice that things got better for you?
Oh, yes, definitely with my skin. And like, I really, and this is crazy because I'm not 100% vegan. I'm more a vegetarian. And mm-hmm. I noticed when I consume ice cream, like I develop like a small rash. So then I leave it alone mm-hmm. and I'm back good. So, and that's why I'm slowly making that transition to 100% vegan lifestyle. So I know exactly, and my hair is grown a lot since the back to the food truck days.
Yeah.
But so yeah, my hair, my skin, has been very accepting of the plant-based lifestyle.
Yeah.
About that food truck lifestyle, what are some of the things about, you know, working in a food truck that you think most people don't know? Like, what's the kind of inside life of a food truck chef?
I think a lot of food truck owners say it's harder than it looks, and that can be true. Just trying to get the food truck off the ground is probably the biggest hurdle of months. Not even, you know, trying to get that first person to come to your window. So just the licensing process, the permits, finding a base station or a commercial kitchen, saying that you can use them to operate. Besides that, you know, like I said, just trying to get that first few people to come to your truck can be a hurdle. But once you get them there and they like the food, they love the customer service, you know, that you almost probably have a lifetime customer. But and also with our food truck, it was a real small food truck, and I'm 6'2", probably like 240 pounds, so it's like it was real cramped. You know, we used to park down by the Zocalo on them hot days. It got very hot in there.
Yeah. So you get done with the end of the day, and you feel better. You like overall, you know, your skin is good. Your hair is growing from eating a plant-based diet, but you're hot and you uncrunch yourself from standing in this little tiny food truck at the end of the day. Part of a food truck is marketing, but I think with you, like what I've seen just from watching is that the word has grown about Twisted Plants because people are excited about your food. You know, I mean, I think I see more, you know, I definitely see you guys with your, you know, like your Facebook page, you know, talking about the food and talking about new things. But I see just as many posts from people, you know, with pictures of their food and saying how delicious it was. And so would you say, is the marketing piece, have you seen more growth from like word of mouth? Or from kind of the efforts that you guys have put in? Or is it kind of some of each?
It's both, but honestly, I think more so word of mouth. And that's why we love our customers so much, because they, you know, they post the pictures and let us repost it. And I think, you know, mm-hmm. once that, a lot of businesses work by word of mouth. Well, once you got that, you know, that the food is good, but mm-hmm. that's like only half of what you need to, I guess, to operate a successful truck. Mm-hmm. Once that customer makes that post, now her friends and her family know about it, or his friends and his family know about it. And it's like, you know, where'd you get that from? Oh, that looks so good. And I think that mm-hmm. continuous feedback just keep people coming. And that's what any business, especially the food business, need. It's like that. That mm-hmm. constant positive feedback and the constant reviews and pictures.
Yeah. And how much of your business has been fueled? How much do you feel like there's just a lot more people who are interested in plant-based eating versus people that you've kind of educated along the way?
I think a lot of people are willing to try it. And when I say try, I mean in regards to the plant-based lifestyle. You know, a lot of people say, I must stop eating beef or I must stop eating pork. And, you know, if you can cut both of those off, like, you pretty much halfway there to a plant-based lifestyle. It's like, you know, a lot of people that come to the restaurant are pescatarian. So
sure.
And it's like, we have customers from all sectors or in all walks of life. And it's like, just people are willing to try something different. And I think that keeps customers coming in the door.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think if somebody, I mean, that's part of what it takes. Somebody is willing to try something new, and then you get them to try something. And the trick is make sure it's good enough that they will eat it again. Right. Yeah. So, but obviously that happened because, you know, you talked with me. I mean, I interviewed you a number of weeks ago, and you were telling me, and Ariel was saying that you did have in the back of your head that you wanted to start, you know, an actual physical brick and mortar restaurant. Yes. But it was kind of, you know, down the line, down the line sometime when you'd made enough money. But you guys moved a lot faster on that than most food trucks do. And why were you able to do that?
It was timing. Yeah, it was divine timing. And like I was laid off for about 4 weeks. And it's like, I've been searching on a Craigslist just for food trucks, and I'm always online just browsing. And I was on Craigslist and I seen a post, a burger joint or a restaurant for lease or things of that nature. And when I clicked on it, I called the current person that was running the restaurant, and he gave me the rundown, sent me the emails and pictures, and just said, come down and look at it. And I think between, you know, me being laid off and looking at that post, it was like, if we're going to make the jump, we might as well just do it now. So, and I think that's what propelled us.
Anything to lose at
right
point.
exactly.
Yeah. So it's like, okay, we want our business, we need our business to make money more than ever, you know.
Yeah.
And, yes. You know, you kind of, yeah, people make their biggest leaps, I think, when times are hardest. I remember we saw a huge jump in restaurant openings during, like, in 2008, mostly 2009, like right after the recession, because people lost their jobs and they're like, oh, I always wanted to open a restaurant. Let's do it now. Like, I have nothing better to do at this point. So, definitely. But you had kind of two things going on here. So you had gotten laid off. You did find the restaurant, but we also have, you know, we also had this COVID pandemic.
That little thing,
you know, kind of all of a sudden it hit, like that little thing that, you know, still going on.
A little casual news story made the rounds.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. So you have a restaurant, and I think the biggest thing for you is that it was good to have your own kitchen.
Yes.
Like that you could operate out of. Because obviously you weren't opening, you know, you couldn't open your restaurant right away.
Right.
And so it was going to be carry out because of the pandemic. Uh-huh. But how has that transition been for you in terms of going from the truck to your own kitchen and a restaurant, even though you're only doing carry out? Like, was that a big change? And has that been a big positive for you?
And with all that, it's like, once we seen it, and like, once we took the visit down there, it's like, okay, this is nice, we should jump on it. And then, like, you know, we think, you know, we gave ourselves a timeline to do this, and get the licensing and get the inspector to come out. But then, you know, in regards to signing the lease, once we signed the lease, then that's when everything just, the world was at a standstill, not as a figure of speech. And it's, so everything almost got put on hold at the same time, well, after we signed the lease. But we was able to get the inspectors and the health department to come out and look at everything. So we went through that whole process. And now we have this, the pandemic in the air. And it's like, what we going to do. What's our plan? What's our goal? How are we going to open? And to what extent? So, and going from the food truck to the brick and mortar during the midst of COVID-19, it's like, no, we can't have a grand opening. We haven't really had a grand opening yet. So we're still looking forward to actually having that first person come sit down in the restaurant. it's trying to work through all that. But the curbside have been working, and we definitely appreciate that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And even though people aren't coming in, so you guys are doing kind of carry out and curbside pickup right now.
Correct.
The difference is you guys have a bigger kitchen, and it sounds to me like you've been able to expand your menu.
Since going from the food truck to the kitchen to the brick and mortar, we probably added like seven big things to the menu where we actually need that extra space and extra time to prep and whatnot to make it. So that's the Cali Bites and the Soul Plain Sandwich, like our version of the chicken sandwich, our version of the chicken Philly and the steak Philly. So, and with the food truck only having a certain amount of space, we couldn't do everything we wanted to do, so that the commercial space did give us that opportunity to expand the menu.
Yeah. And are your Sunday specials also part of that?
Yes, very much so. Okay. And we try to do a Sunday special every other Sunday. And I know we ran one back twice, but we're trying to offer something new, something different every other Sunday.
Mm-hmm. And this is so on the food truck, it was mostly burgers. And you had some different things that were more like snacks or side dishes.
Yeah.
And so you've expanded the sandwiches.
Yes.
That you offer. But now the Sunday specials, let's talk about that, because that's kind of, some of these things are outside of the sandwich realm, right?
Yeah. People call on Wednesday asking, what's going to be your next Sunday special? Just so they can get a heads up. But we did a famous bowl, which is like our version of the KFC famous bowl. Everybody loved it, at least for the most part. At least what we know, everybody loved it.
So like fried unchicken tenders, maybe, and mashed potatoes and gravy.
Yeah,
that sort of bowl.
Yes, exactly. So it was the mashed potatoes, the gravy, the corn, queso cheese, barbecue sauce, and topped with the chicken patty.
Okay. All right. So comfort food. And then did you say that the lasagna was another dish? Like what kinds of other things?
Yes, lasagna was supposed to be introduced weeks ago, but we have yet to do that. So that actually might be coming up pretty soon. And that's gonna be the lasagna, some garlic bread, and a salad. Honestly, we get a lot, but we have been getting a handful of requests to offer salads. And what we've been planning to do is to offer that healthier alternative for our salad eaters. So that's in the near future as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Other than salad, is there kind of like a dish that you can't wait to kind of turn vegan? Something that you kind of like, other than the lasagna, obviously, which sounds like it's in Rupa, is there like another dish that you're like, I would love to, craft this, find the vegan version of this?
Honestly, it goes back to what we miss, or me personally miss eating the most, and that is ribs. So if we can't perfect a great rib, that's our goal, just to more and more barbecue options and things of that nature. So if we can, the goal for me is the rib, to perfect a good rib tip, or just cyber ribs in general.
Yeah, take me through, because I'm the idiot on the podcast. How does one go about making a vegan rib? That seems contradictory. That seems, it doesn't seem like a thing that can exist.
And it's happening right before our eyes. It's a lot of YouTubers that we follow, a lot of vegan chefs and cooks that we follow that have paved the way for the likes of me and Ariel to try to come up with something as a rib. And so it's more so just taking an example or a sample of what we see via YouTube or via cookbook and try to replicate it, but put our twist on it.
Do they still have, mm-hmm. would they still have bones in them?
No, but that's very possible.
I was wondering how that works. Like, how do you have a rib? It would be such a weird process, like putting the bone back into this vegan rib.
I believe that's, I wouldn't really call it science, but just the creativeness of what chefs and cooks can do. So, I mean, I think that could be possible, but probably farther along down the road, but the speed of which plant-based foods are picking up, anything is possible at this point.
I
would agree. Yeah. So at this point, are you looking more at like a seitan rib? Because seitan is a protein that's made from like wheat gluten, mm-hmm. or wheat flour and water. And it creates like a chewy, it is probably the closest that you're going to get to like the texture of chicken meat.
Yeah.
And it takes on, and the cool thing to me about a seitan is that it doesn't taste like much. It's just a texture.
Right. And so that's the same with like tofu.
What you do to it makes all the flavor.
Exactly.
See, I would say the coolest thing about seitan is that it sounds distinctly like the Lord of the Underworld. what non-vegan named seitan? Like, what person pranked the vegan community and was like, "Hi, I've created this substance that duplicates me. Uh-huh. Also, I've named it after a code word for evil. Have at it."
So. It's because it's so delicious, Matt. See.
And get behind so me, it still has the texture, correct? It still has the texture of meat, essentially, but it's not. It's this gluten protein, it sounds like.
Yes, for the most part. I still had the, like Miss Lori said, the closest thing to texture as far as pork or chicken might come by. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, just add that with a liquid smoke and let it marinate. And see what you come up with, but it's also
can you grill that? Is that grillable or is that a pure?
One of the first times we tried it, or it's probably the second time we did try to grill it. I know I probably grilled it too long. I grilled it like it was regular, like it was regular meat, and it didn't turn out right. So that's what we've been working on. So it is grillable.
That's very interesting. So. Intriguing.
Yeah, lots of testing. Yeah. So, I think most of the time when you come across like chicken, it's usually made with seitan. And is that what you guys use as well for like your fried chicken?
We use a soy based Germany. It's a soy based protein.
Okay,
and it's we actually sourced that out, and so. And the one we use, it has a mm-hmm. quote unquote bone in it. So back to the ribs.
Ah!
So it's one that comes with like a bamboo bone, a bamboo stick, and it's another version that comes with like a sugar cane mm-hmm. stick.
Sugar cane sticks. Mm-hmm. Very interesting.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because I imagine that adds to the flavor a little bit.
Yes.
That's interesting. There's so much possibility here for flavored bones.
Well, see, and now the next step to this, of course, is putting in a bone that not only gives you that like that structure and the texture next to the meat, but you know, why not make it edible? Because you know, lower the waste. So, which is kind of counterintuitive. I mean, you think about, vegan food. Not everybody looks at plant-based food as being like, a substitute for meat. You know, some people want it to be not meat, you know. So you guys are...
We've talked to a lot of people
you guys
on
are
this
really
podcast.
Creating.
Yeah. About that, that kind of, that battle of like, what if we just made vegetable dishes that highlighted that they're vegetables that aren't trying to pretend to be another food. Uh-huh. But then there's also, you know, the like, we want to meet people halfway and we want to give people something they recognize, but healthy. And it's kind of that, those, these interesting faction makes it sound like it's a warring situation, but it's kind of two interesting perspectives about it where it's like, you know, do you want it to be the vegetables or do you want it to, you know, kind of truly be an alternative?
Very much so. And that's why we give, over at Melanie or in Nina over at Celesta, like when I talk to Nina, I tell her like you are like the more natural and like the upscale world of vegans as far as like the food they make and everything like that. But and we are more like the comfort food that regular plant based eater or vegans are frequent. So and that's we, I guess with us, we can offer the alternative for a better environment, but we don't necessarily, I don't know if I should be saying this, but we don't necessarily promote a healthier lifestyle. Because at the same time, it's a burger joint at the end of the day. So it's better for the planet, yes. But it's still a food that shouldn't be consumed every day.
Right. But when you're eating a vegan diet, when you're eating any kind of diet, like everybody needs a moment when they eat something that's really comforting, you know, whether it's dairy-free ice cream or a burger or, you know, something fried, you know, like not everybody can virtuously eat roasted beets, you know, and quinoa. No, like, I mean, all of these things, and all of these things are delicious, but like, I think everybody needs that. And it's, and I also feel like what you guys are doing is you're creating a transition that makes eating vegan food or eating plant-based food a little less scary to people because it's familiar. It's taking flavors that everybody loves, you know. And honestly, every restaurant right now is trying to get a hold of, like, trying to serve food that everybody loves.
Exactly.
Because it's a pandemic and you need people to come out and you need people to want to eat whatever it is that you're serving. So burgers, pizza, like, I think we've seen more places launch fried chicken over the past 4 months, you know. And so, you know, I think there's a place in the world for all of it, you know.
Yes, very much so.
Yeah. Yeah. So kind of what, like, you were telling me kind of before the podcast started, like, you guys are sort of in a holding place. Like, you're not really sure how soon you might be able to open the restaurant. Or that you'd feel comfortable doing that. But kind of what's your plan? What does the future look like for you, even though some things are kind of a little uncertain? Like, what would you like to see?
I would like to see us being able to operate at, like, the full capacity, like being able to fill our seats in once, you know, it's safe to do so. And I think that's where the standstill is, because I talked to the health inspector a few weeks ago. He said, you know, you're at a 75% capacity right now. You can have people in. I'm like, yeah, but we still going to wait just to see how everything plays out. Mm-hmm. So, and that's it. It's like, do we want to, no, you go outside, it's a risk for everything, but do we want to increase the risk of employees or customers and team members getting sick, and or like, what can we do to help prevent the increase or the spread of, you know, COVID-19?
Yeah,
right.
What can people do to help out, and what can the government do to help out? Are there any kind of things there that can kind of help restaurants like yours survive these obviously ridiculous times that we're in?
I think And just from the beginning, like we knew there was going to be a lot of restaurants closing and it's just businesses in general. I think like the hospitality got the bad end of it. And that's like due to travel, tourism and everything of that nature. I think, if it's money available for restaurants and small businesses, it should be like readily available to, not a lot of red tape because businesses truly need that money. And beyond the financial aspect of it, just making sure the necessities are there to keep everyone safe via the face masks or gloves or like sanitizer. I went to Restaurant Depot like 2 days ago and they have no gloves. Mm. It's like, it's hard.
Because it's not only like the materials aren't are tough to get, but it's an added expense. Like nobody had. I mean, I think restaurants that transition even like so many carryout containers, and so much, plus gloves and masks and cleaners that nobody, that people weren't using before, and then the prices go up because the demand is high. So so many things costing businesses money. And you guys, yes. I mean, one thing we didn't hit on is you guys are trying to be eco-friendly. So yes. At the same time, because obviously you're serving plant-based food and that's expensive too. Right.
We were trying to get rid of what we have acquired from the previous tenant, which at the end of the day, we probably just give it to like a shelter or a pantry. It's a lot of styrofoam, but we are trying to follow a more eco-friendly route with our takeout containers, our cups, our straws. So it comes at an additional cost, but at the same time, we believe that what people like to see now. So this company's taking that extra step to make the world a better place.
Right.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So let's see. So what are your hours right now at the restaurant? Like how many days a week can people come and visit you?
Ryan, it's good you asked that because I was talking to Truman over at Funky Fresh and he was saying, y'all doing well, but make sure you take a breather. So, but as of right now,
yes,
the hours are Sunday, close Monday. So Sunday through Thursday, 12 to 5 on Sunday and 12 to 7, Tuesday through Thursday. Friday and Saturday is 12 to 8. But we was thinking about, and you are the first to notice, we was thinking about...
exclusive!
Yes. So we was thinking about extending our weekday hours and Friday and Saturday and closing on Sunday, but it's up in the air right now. So we're just trying to see how everything plays out. But if we was to extend our hours, it'll be 11 to 8 and 11 to 9 and close on Sunday and Monday.
Okay. Yeah. Well, and it is, I think it is really important. I mean, this industry is hard on people. It is long days, And you have to have a passion for it and a dedication to it in the first place, let alone like working hard every day. And I think there's added stressors now. So Truman McGee from Funky Fresh Swing Rolls, he's been doing this for a while. Uh-huh. And I know that he ran himself pretty hard to start. And I think he's getting to the point where, like, he's wise. He's wise to say, take a little bit of time for yourself. You have a family. You have, you just need to sleep. Well, a couple times a week. So would that mean that you would probably shift, like your Sunday specials might become Saturday specials?
Right. Yeah. Or more so like if that. like a random pop up or like a 2 day advance notice as far as a special here, a special there. So yeah, and that was honestly my main concern. Like, okay, we started this Sunday special, and this is me talking to my wife. So we started this Sunday special. Now you thinking about shutting down Sundays? So that's where we at with that.
I want to hop back to something quick. Is there anything that you miss about the food truck days? Is there like a part of that that job that you're like, oh, I miss? I mean, I imagine no, but is there something
for you?
Really?
Yeah, it's you know, with the food truck, you know, it's being able to just pack up and leave whenever you wanted to. So now, like, when you're trying to be more established, yes, you know, you got to be committed to, okay, we say we're going to be open from 12 to 8, we got to stay open from 12 to 8 versus, okay, with the food truck, you know, we can come out
first
2 days
we'll
a week.
We'll just drive our truck away.
Yeah.
Right, exactly.
I suppose when business is like a little slow at the restaurant, you can't just pack up the restaurant and be like, we're going to go somewhere a little bit busier right now.
Right.
Exactly. We're going to just go a few blocks
because
down.
Because if somebody comes, because inevitably somebody will come, you'll say, oh, we're open till 8 and it's slow and you close at 6:30 and inevitably someone will come at 10 to 7, to the restaurant. And they'll be like, that place is never open. It only takes one. That place is never open when I want to go there.
Exactly. So,
consistency is so key with a brick and mortar. But you guys also made kind of a shift. Like you have, like, I'm so excited for you guys because, you know, as a food truck, you were also mobile. So you could go to different parts of town and be in different places. And now, you guys are in Cudahy, you know, which is south of Milwaukee, but it's a little bit of, and it's not super far away, but it's a little bit of a drive for maybe some of your regular customers. But you guys were telling me that people are definitely driving to you, you are a destination restaurant.
We have had a few people drive from Illinois, from Kenosha, Waukesha, Green Bay, and it's for us when we went to this location, we just said how far are we willing to drive, and we Celesta being one of our go to restaurants, it's about a 22-minute drive from our house. So like, if we're willing to drive 22 minutes to another restaurant, we can drive 25 to ours.
Yep.
So, and that's why we just made that decision. Yes. Okay, we can ride this wave out.
Yeah. So you guys took a chance and people followed you. Yeah.
We did. And it was scary at first. It was very scary. And like you said, Ben, most of our clientele was back on the northwest side of Milwaukee, and that's where people knew where to find us. So to get people to drive, I wouldn't say out their way, but additional time to come find us, that was up in questions. But once people was willing to make that drive, we knew it might work.
Yeah. So have you heard from people? So, I mean, because part of that picture is how does the food transport? You know, like if I'm coming to get carry out and you're a ways away and then I'm driving it back home, you know, versus eating it sitting there. Do I have to eat this in my car or will it make it the 15 minutes back to my, you know, to my house?
And that's the thing. It's like, and that's one of the reasons why we haven't started delivery yet, because like you said, some food is meant to be eating per se within 15 minutes, 20 minutes, or, you know, it's, and we have gotten those calls where, honestly, this probably happened like 2 weeks ago. A customer came, probably 35-minute drive, and she didn't eat the food till she got back home. So she gave us a call, said, when I got home, the food was lukewarm or it was cold. And it's that factor right there. Like, you know, it's 30 minutes, so the food might not be as hot as it was when it left the restaurant. But that's the cost of trying to please everyone.
So tips for right now. Like, are you guys close by to like a park where someone could stop and maybe eat their food if they had a ways to drive?
Yes, sir. So,
someplace close.
We actually had the lake, probably not even a mile away from the restaurant, and we also partner up with S-Ray Arcade down the street. I do not have that address on hand, but they're probably about 3 blocks away from the restaurant, and S-Ray Arcade has a patio and they have liquor, which is always a plus.
So,
we encourage the customers, so if they're trying to find somewhere to eat, just walk down to S-Ray Arcade and just maintain the safety standards.
Okay. Yeah. No, that's a good idea. And I think the, one of the things about the restaurant industry is that people do tend to work together. So kind of supporting each other's businesses like that. Yeah. And that's a great thing to see. Like, your new neighbors and mm-hmm. people helping people out is awesome.
Right. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
And I mean, I'll say when I picked up Sap during the pandemic, there were people, there was Kurt Fogel from Milk Can there. It's just been really cool to see how restaurants are kind of united together and kind of, you know, forming this like net, this like, mm-hmm. this spider web of connections. So that way, you know, if somebody starts, you know, struggling, everyone's kind of helping keep everyone propped up. Because right now, I mean, considering the state of our state's legislature, they seem very disinterested in doing literally anything. So it sadly seems like it's going to be a lot on restaurants of holding and people, you know, going to these restaurants and supporting and you know,
right.
I feel great because when I over order food now from restaurants, I'm not, you know, fat and gluttonous. I'm supporting small business. So that's
you
really
nice.
You
that.
Know,
I gotta use that. Yes.
I ordered $100 of takeout last Saturday night. I mean, it was for a group of people, not just for me. But I was like, I feel great. I just donated to the local business, and I'm going to do it again.
Yeah,
very much so.
Yeah.
Which on that note, Brandon, if people want to donate to your local business and get delicious food in return, where can people find you?
Yes, we're located at 4905 South Packard Avenue, Cudahy, Wisconsin, 53110. And we open 6 days a week. So, and back to the community partnership. We always wanted to make sure we have that community aspect in mind, or keep that community aspect in mind via it be a work on the local businesses or helping per se a baseball team or volleyball team, basketball team. So we're always open for that. We're actually just partner up with the Wisconsin Humane Society. So we're giving back 10% from today until the 24th of our sales back to the Humane Society.
So, oh, awesome.
This is just another way
to kind
of... No, go ahead.
Yeah, well, and I remember when you talked about when you first moved to Cudahy, it was about not only did you have a place for your business, but you were trying to get to know, like, people who lived in the area and other businesses in the area, you know, because, you know, for small businesses to succeed, it's about being together, building those relationships, working together, because, you know, they say a high tide raises all ships, and I think that's really true.
Very much so.
And people can also find you guys on we told people where you are and your address, but people can also find you on social media.
That's just what I was going to ask, Lori. Excellent
Facebook.
Work. Good podcasting. Yes. We're still social distancing podcasting, so that's why our audio may be intriguing. I'll call it this episode. people can find you guys on social media as well.
Yes, Instagram and Facebook, same handle at Twisted Plants MKE. Our website, and we've been telling people this for a minute now, but it's actually happening. Our website should be up within the next week. And then we're also partnering
with
local developers and local entrepreneurs trying to incorporate their businesses and ideas into the website as well.
That's awesome.
Yeah, because did you guys end up launching a partnership with Scratch Ice Cream, for instance?
Yes.
Or is that still kind of, you're still talking? Okay.
No. It's full throttle. We get our weekly deliveries. Hopefully, when everything settles, we can come together more to develop a few flavors that we can call our own and see how that goes.
Yeah. So lots of new things coming up for you. So people should definitely follow you on social. Because you're announcing. I feel like you're announcing new things every week. and, you know, definitely, you know, watch your business grow, and pick up, you know, take the time, go to Cudahy, pick up some delicious food. So for right now, people can order from you on the phone for pickup.
Yeah. Yes. So it can be via phone. And those numbers are, we have two lines. It's 414-800-4005 and 414-439-4325. Or you can do a walk-up. So you can order curbside as well and just get put in line, I'd say.
Yep. And your menu is available on your Facebook page and Instagram too? Facebook.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. All right.
Well, thank you so much for the awesome conversation, Brandon, and for everything you're doing. And, you know, cheers to you guys, making it through all of this. Hopefully, I mean, we're recording this on a day where there seems to be some decent vaccine news coming out of Oxford. So there's hope? Question mark?
There's hope.
Probably add another question mark right there.
Yeah. I'm just going to end every episode with like new vaccine news, hope. And then it cuts to like 2021 and I'm like, new vaccine news, hope. But I guess I'd rather be that way than be like, we're never leaving the house again.
Right.
But thank you so much.
Every day is a new day. Yes. Thank you so much.
I know. Thank you too.
Please say hi to Ariel and we'll talk to you guys hopefully soon.
All right. Yeah. Thank you all so much. Thank you for inviting us on the show.
Awesome conversation. Awesome human being. A big fan of Brandon and a big fan of Twisted Plants. People, go there. Support local restaurants.
Definitely support them. And I wish that Ariel, who could have been there, she's got a great story too, but definitely go get to know the people and order some of their delicious, comforting food. I think you will be surprised. Vegan, not vegan, either way. So, yeah. And it's so fun to see these little small businesses launching even during hard times.
Yeah, it's been between this and Sweet Basil a few weeks ago, which was really, really wonderful conversation. And they opened up during the pandemic and they seem to be doing well as well. So it's nice to see, you know, signs of life still popping up. Due to a lack of audience demand, I will not be doing my Pringles Crunch of the week this week. But instead, I will I want to talk. I've been watching a new show. Well, it's not a new show on Netflix. Lori, have you ever watched Supermarket Sweep?
I have. I actually have a friend who is on the show.
Really?
A few times. She,
no.
Yeah, she won. Like, she had a really long string of wins on Supermarket Sweep. I'm almost positive this is it. This is the guy.
No, that's Guy's Grocery Games.
Sure. Crap. Oh, it was Guy's Grocery Games.
No,
damn
Supermarket Sweep is from the 80s/90s.
No, then I haven't seen this.
It's great.
Okay.
It is so wonderful. It is, first of all, just an incredible time warp into awful early 90s fashion. You get to see some great old brands that definitely don't exist anymore. It's great because the whole show, they answer questions about food brands. And then the winning team gets to run around the grocery store and they like try to like throw, they try to rack up the highest tab at the supermarket of the three teams. And so like they grabbed like,
I would totally win.
Well, let's find out. Let's find out. Lori, what's the first thing you would grab at the grocery store in order to put up the biggest tab? What would you grab, Lori?
I
know if you have the right strategy.
Well, you definitely, I mean, as long as you're allowed to grab things, like, I mean, you definitely have to grab
meat. Lori knows.
I mean, meat is a high-ticket item.
You know when people are pros at Supermarket Sweep, when they run immediately to grab the turkeys, the hams, and the sirloins or the tenderloins.
Yeah. Beef is particularly expensive.
They have an imported cheese section.
Baby back ribs.
So that's you got to hit that deli.
spendy cheeses. Yeah. And if you are at a supermarket that has some cool stuff, you know, then you go into specialty foods, like, you know, grab that crazy, like, truffle salt. And
yeah, I don't think they had truffle salt in the 90s.
Specialty stuff. They probably don't, because not in the 90s, but
they've got 45 different brands of detergent, but no truffle salt.
Right.
But we do have food porn this week. That was Matt Talks About Supermarket Sweep. My favorite new segment that is not a segment. I will be reading this week. I will be reading a piece on, it's called Avocado Toast. And it is about avocado toast. I am the resident millennial on staff, so it is my job to read the piece on avocado toast. It's written by Saxon Bard for a magazine.
Yeah. This is for a literary magazine, too. I believe it was also called for Maudlin House.
Oh, God. More Maudlin House.
Which is where our piece was
awful
from last week.
Name for a company. So, maudlin is not a good word.
I like the word maudlin. I don't necessarily love what it...
It's a nice word, but it doesn't have good connotations.
I know, but it's a nice word. It rolls
it does
off
not
the tongue.
Work.
I like to.
It does roll off the tongue.
All right. Well, I'll just, after this episode, I'm just going to go and be maudlin.
That means bad things, Lori. That means that you were. Yeah. All right. I'm reading Avocado Toast.
I know. I'm giving you a hard time.
This is Avocado Toast by Saxon Bard for Maudlin House. Travel and Leisure has said that avocado on toast comes from Australia. I call bullshit. It comes from a girl I knew during the summer of 2002, who on summer evenings, when the Southern California sunset made everything look apocalyptic and on fire, and that world destruction was imminent, would blow through a loaf of sourdough bread and a six-pack of avocados lying on a bowl on her kitchen counter, because we're all gonna die anyways. Sorry, I forget her name. Now, she's just avocado toast girl to me. But I did see her years later, long after we had stopped telling each other lies and eating avocados on toast. She was on TV, sitting on a couch with some husband, trying to figure out which movie to watch. Time Warner cable commercials are the worst. That piece took some wild turns, Lori. That was an adventure of a piece.
It did indeed.
I'm going to read more Saxon Bard work after this.
I liked it a lot.
I do
lot,
too.
Though,
this is me being genuine. Maudlin House. Yeah, get a new name for your company, because your articles are actually fun.
Because we love you.
I have something to say. I don't like avocado toast. Not a fan.
Do you like avocados?
Not a huge fan.
All right, that would be the first.
Yeah, it's the toast part that's really throwing me off, Lori. It's the slightly browned bread that's really upsetting me about the avocado toast. Not a fan.
I'm gonna go out there and say that you maybe there's a possibility that you have not met the right avocado toast.
At this point, it's kind of a little bit of a rebellion, because I feel like millennials, it's such an annoying cliche. It's like if I had a selfie stick, like even if it would be useful, I would not buy one out of protest. I'll buy the hash.
And what I want to say, what I want to say is avocado toast is such a waste of money. Here we go. Like, avocados are not... an avocado toast... Okay, so if I get really serious about this, avocado toast has done nothing but damage to the avocado industry, because...
Supply and demand has gotten screwed
up. Avocado farmers, supply and demand has gotten screwy. Small avocado farmers, it's gone crazy. And I think... what is that show that talks about issues with food...
It might be a Guy's Grocery Games.
No, it's not. Anyway, there is a show that kind of goes, and I think this avocados were an episode of the show, just the environmental impact of the desire for so many avocados.
See, everybody,
in the US.
Stop eating your green
gunk. It's just screwing up the world. But here's the deal, is you can buy an avocado at the store. They're not that expensive. And you can make a piece of toast. Oh, the show is called Rotten.
Oh, yeah. It's on Netflix,
and
right?
It's a series. It's on Netflix. And it's a series of episodes, kind of like mini documentaries about different aspects of a lot of them. I think maybe all of them are food industry related. And it just kind of goes into, like, you know, what's the impact of the
food
that you're eating?
Are you sure that's not Guy's Restaurant Games?
It's not. No, it's absolutely not. That's a game show.
I know.
Show.
I'm just busting your chops.
Yeah. No, this is more serious. If you want to watch something entertaining, watch
no,
Guys.
You should watch Supermarket.
You want to watch something more serious, you know. But you know, avocado is not that expensive. Everybody can make a piece of toast. Like, so just the most basic avocado toast. It's like, spread some avocado on your toast. You know, season it a little with something delicious and, you know, there you go. But you're going to spend a bunch of money ordering avocado toast at a restaurant. And unless someone has gone through the pains of making like something really delicious, like I have had avocado toast at restaurants that I've really found worth eating. And that's when like they're spending time, you know, maybe they're putting little crispy shallots and like things on it that make it taste better and more texturally interesting, that you're not going to take time to do at home. But if you're just ordering a piece of avocado toast with like tomato and, you know,
it feels a little bit like getting spaghetti.
It
feels like getting spaghetti at an Italian restaurant. Cause it's like, I can make spaghetti at home. That's not hard. Like if I'm gonna dine out, I'm gonna eat something special.
And unless there's sauce recipe,
unless it's like a great sauce recipe, legendary spaghetti,
it's amazing.
Exactly.
Yeah. And even then, I would say if their spaghetti is amazing, everything will be even more amazing.
Yeah, exactly. So. Hey, Lauren, anyway, where can people find the podcast that people are listening to?
Hey, you're already listening.
You can find us on Guy's Grocery Games, Food Network.
You cannot. 8 o'clock. You cannot. But you can find us. You can totally find us on social media. We are on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at Food Crush Pod. So look for us there. We have, you know, secret fun things that you can go and discover.
So not so secret.
Give
things.
Us a follow. Well, they're secret until you find them.
This is true. This is true, Lori.
It's like a little treasure hunt. So, but Matt, people can also find you.
I'm on the internet, and it's not a secret until you find me. You can find me at A Man About Film on Facebook, Twitter, and rarely on Instagram, but you can still follow me there and look at.
But if you went to Instagram to find Matt, you could find
me. You can also find Lori, and so people, Lori, where can people find you on Instagram and on Facebook and on Twitter?
I am Low Frederick everywhere, all of those places.
And where can people find Guy's Grocery Games?
I don't know at this point. Is that still going on?
This joke or Guy's Grocery Games?
Guy's Grocery Games. I mean, okay, so that was meant to be a double meaning. Like, is this conversation still going
on? You brought it to a new level. Yeah.
But is Guy's Grocery Games also still going?
Nothing stops Guy Fieri.
At least the season that they filmed before.
Yeah, the man got trashed by the New York Times and only came out stronger. So I say nothing can defeat Guy Fieri except for a barber. So. Anyway.
Well, maybe I'll put this on my list. Maybe I can get my friend to come talk about Guy's Grocery Games. That's tangentially food related.
We're doing it.
All right.
Put it on the calendar.
Yeah. All right.
Oh, boy. Well,
I'll put it on my list.
The second best episode of Food Crush of all time, because clearly the Guy's Grocery Games episode is going to be the best. Thank you, everyone, as always, for listening to Food Crush. And as always, keep cooking.